Most of the cinema icons of the last century have passed on, leaving their work frozen on celluloid or preserved in digital code for us to continue to enjoy and explore. Thankfully, some of their candid moments and reflections on fame and artistry have also been preserved. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. A pair of pioneering producers have spent more than 25 years creating intimate profiles of some of the cinema's most illustrious actors and filmmakers. Joan Kramer and David Healy have just published their recollections of a quarter century working with some of the biggest names in film. The book is titled appropriately, In the Company of Legends, and I'm delighted to have Joan Kramer on the program today. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for asking me.
Well, thank you for joining us by phone from New York City. Fred Astaire, Katharine Hepburn, Jimmy Stewart, Peter O'Toole, Lauren Bacall, the list goes on and on and on. It's an extraordinary pantheon, if you will, of great actors and filmmakers that you've had the pleasure of working with over the last 25 or 30 years. I'm wondering, you began producing these biographical profiles of these artists for PBS back in the late 70s, early 80s, a time when there wasn't much precedent for this kind of work. Did you know then that this might be the focus of your work for decades?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. David and I always call this the accidental career we fell into. I did join WNET, Public Television New York, to work on a series that David happened to be also part of the staff of, and it was called Skyline. And it was a local series about arts in New York City, which, of course, was wide open. I mean, it was like kids in a candy shop to pick your subjects. And during that series, we did a program about somebody that I knew named Rudolf Nureyev, the famous ballet dancer.
Sure.
And he had asked me, because I used to work on the Dick Cavett Show before I went to Channel 13, and he had said to me, I think Fred Astaire is the greatest American dancer. Could you ever arrange for me to meet him? And I told that story to David, and we wanted to get them together by having Joanne Woodward, who's a great dear friend of mine and already was at the time, do sort of a talk show in which she would interview both Astaire and Nureyev. Well, Nureyev said yes immediately, and Astaire said no immediately. And so it segued into, why don't we do a profile of Fred Astaire? Nureyev is on it as an interviewee, and Joanne Woodward narrated the show. But I never did get them in the same room together.
So you started at the top, if you will, with Fred Astaire.
And then, of course, the question came from PBS, so who are you going to do next?
Right.
And David said, what do you mean a next? I mean, we wanted to do a show about Fred Astaire, and we've done it. You know, not too bright to say that. But they said, no, you should do another one for us, because, you see, the Astaire shows were done for pledge weeks, and they made a lot of money for the stations around the country. And so they wanted another star profile. And oddly enough, while the form of documentaries about movie stars had been done, it had gone dormant. And then somewhere along the way, PBS acquired a film about Edith Piaf. And it did, people just flocked to watch it. And that's what gave them the impetus to give us the money to do the Fred Astaire shows. And once the Fred Astaire shows were successful, came the question, so who's next? By the way, that was almost the title of the book. So who are you going to do next? And when our publisher, late in the game, said, I think maybe you ought to change the title, we said, why? Because the only context we ever heard that question in was after we finished a program. Well, the publisher pointed out to us that it might have a different connotation in some people's ears. And then it hit us that maybe they're right.
It is amazing how that one doorway, though, opened to this whole world.
Exactly.
And you became specialists, if you will, in profiling these amazing actors and directors and artists. You mentioned that you had worked for Dick Cavett. Did you learn during that period sort of how to put people at ease and create trust among these very high-profile celebrities?
Probably, but, you know, when you're in the midst, as you very well know, Charles, when you're in the midst of doing something, you don't think that you're creating a process of how
right.
to do it. You're just too busy, and you have to get the job done. But I did learn to find people without going through agents and PR people. when I worked for the Dick Cavett Show.
Very important tool.
So I was able to contact people, and frankly, I still say that was the best job in television. You had to be on your toes to do a live 90-minute show a week, and we never edited. We taped from 6 o'clock to 7:30, and it went on the air at 11:30 at night as it was taped. There was never an edit in that show, ever.
My goodness. Many of these amazing people that you you interviewed, and I listed some of them at the beginning of the show, they were from a period that's really the golden age of Hollywood that was very studio-centric, and the Hollywood studios particularly had whole departments that were dedicated to creating and maintaining this public image of these stars. Did they have a sense when you were working with them that this was one of their opportunities to maybe tell stories or to give the public a different view of who they were that had been so packaged for so many decades through the studio system?
That's an excellent question that I never thought about before. I don't know. I don't know what their motive was in agreeing to do the programs we did with them, but I think we were able, based on their own reactions after the shows were finished, and the reactions of their families and friends, that we did get to the real person, which probably was, prior to that, extremely protected by the studio publicity mills. And also, you have to remember that those people were only, you had to go out to the movies to see them in the golden age of Hollywood, as you say, and you saw them on a big silver screen, just out of reach.
Right.
They were bigger than life, right? And so what we were able to do is bring them into people's living rooms. And that was perhaps the impact that was most important. People did feel that they now were in reach.
The smallness of the TV screen in your living room, the intimacy,
et cetera. And they were extremely generous with their suggestions of what we could shoot and where we could shoot. Not, they didn't tell us what to do, but they suggested. And for Katharine Hepburn to tell us, well, you've got to come out to Fenwick. Fenwick was her country home or family home. She never allowed a camera there before. And she said, you've got to come out and shoot some stuff that we do out there all the time. I lay my clothes on the lawn to dry in the morning. I mean, you know, that. Yes.
That sounds very Katharine Hepburn.
It was very Katharine Hepburn, yes. She was an incredible lady.
Of the people that you've interacted with over the years, was she the one that was maybe the closest to her public image?
Maybe, but not necessarily.
She always played very forthright characters oftentimes.
Well, she was always forthright.
She seemed that way in real life, too.
But there was, I always tell people, Katharine Hepburn was a Connecticut Yankee who had a certain sense of morals and a certain sense of propriety, and she was both well-spoken, well-mannered, and tough as nails. In her house, everybody had to have a chair. When crew was standing up, she said, wait a minute, I'll be right back, and went into another room and carried an oversized chair into the room. She said, in my house, nobody is uncomfortable. She was incredible. I mean, I found her to be a real human being who cared about the world, cared about people around her, and particularly was interesting and interested in anything anybody had to say.
That's a great point that you make multiple times in your book, I think, depending on the subjects. I came away with a real sense that for many of these actors, particularly, movies were just one of the things that made up their lives. They had many other interests and were much more rounded than we might give them credit for.
Well, that's exactly right. And that was hopefully what we wanted to get across in our shows, because most people watching those shows only knew them as, quote, the movie star, end quote. They were much more well-rounded, as you say, than just making movies.
Reading the section on Johnny Carson and Jimmy Stewart and their love for one another, frankly, their friendship, this incredible relationship and respect they had for one another, I got also a view reading the book of just a snapshot of how Hollywood at one time was much more village-like. It was much smaller community and much tighter community than it is now. Is that one of the things that you think your films preserve, is a view of the place?
I think so. And as you say, Johnny Carson, who never agreed to do anything outside The Tonight Show except occasionally host the Academy Awards, agreed to do the show with Jimmy because they really cared about each other. You know, when Jimmy appeared on The Tonight Show, there was a real warmth there. And, you know, people could think, oh, yeah, well, okay, you know, but they're both on camera, so of course they're going to portray a warm relationship. It was real. Mm-hmm. They were really friends. They really cared about each other and were protective of each other. You know, when we shot Jimmy and Johnny on the Universal backlot for a whole day, we were more worried about Johnny than we were about Jimmy. After all, Johnny's used to a steady set, a live studio audience, and doing one take. Jimmy's used to sitting around and waiting for sets to be, you know, because we had the use of the entire backlot, so there was a lot of moving around and a lot of waiting between setups. And we were worried that Johnny was going to get antsy. Well, he was terrific. He was terrific. And he settled in very easily, and Jimmy kept saying to him, that was great, John, that was great, John. And Johnny would say to us, I think we have to do things little bit at a time so that Jimmy could concentrate and tell the stories that he wants to tell very accurately and very easily. And if we cover too much ground in one set of questions, we're going to find ourselves wearing him out. I mean, they were genuinely concerned about each other.
You seem to have also had a lifelong relationship with your director, David Healy, that lasted from the very first work you did with on Fred Astaire for PBS, WNET. Did you know at that time that you two would continue working together for so many decades?
Absolutely not, because the first show we did together was prior to the Fred Astaire's. I mentioned that series called Skyline,
mm-hmm.
and we did a show that I recommended about a set and costume designer named Ruben Terarutunian. And Ruben was a friend of mine, but once you got him into a studio, he wanted to, and I mean literally, call the shots. David thought it was going to be the first time in his directing career that he ever went out of a studio with nothing in the can, as they say. It was a nightmare, and I thought, oh my gosh, I recommended this show. David's having a terrible time getting it recorded because of Ruben turning into this basically pseudo-director. And I thought, he'll never want to work with me again, David. And we wound up doing, you know, the last 25 or 30 years together. Couldn't get rid of me.
It's an extraordinary partnership, and mm-hmm. you've produced a lot of amazing films. And most importantly, you've preserved for posterity who these amazing individuals really were and let us peek inside their lives. So as a cinephile, I want to thank you for that and hope that you all continue in that vein, and I certainly thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate your interest and your enthusiasm, and I'm glad you enjoyed the book.
My guest today has been Joan Kramer, co-author with David Healy of the new book, In the Company of Legends. The book chronicles Kramer and Healy's more than 25 years interviewing and profiling important artists, actors, and filmmakers for broadcast outlets like PBS and TCM. In the Company of Legends is published by Beaufort Books and is available from most national booksellers and online retailers. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.